Hello and welcome back to this edition of Windows Community Stand-Up Fall Edition. I'm here with the Corporate Vice President of Windows Developer Platform, Kevin Gallo. How are you doing, my friend?
Good. How are you doing?
Fantastic. So before we get started, please remember that this is all for you, and so this is driven purely on your questions. And so if you have any questions, make sure to submit them. I will get them right over there, and I will ask them any question. It's pretty much whatever you want to ask. He's really good about answering even the tough ones, and it's really awesome. So the last time we saw stuff come out from you guys was our Windows Developer Day that we had in London. So why don't you give us just a tiny recap of what that was, and then what has happened since then?
Cool. So we announced several of the things that we were releasing in the Fall Creators Update. Some of the things you can do for app modernization, some advances in Fluent, many other features. And so since then, a couple things have happened. One, we've shipped a bunch of cool devices, and we're actually seeing customers buy them. We've shipped the mixed reality headsets. We shipped Xbox One X, the Surface Book 2. So it's a great lineup of hardware. We're just seeing, what everybody wants here, most developers want, is they want to see their apps getting used and bought by those customers, and we're seeing great flow through there. We also have started rolling out broadly the Fall Creators Update, and so we're seeing great uptake there as well, and customers really enjoying the new features and new experiences that we've built for it. So we just had a great set of things there as well.
That's awesome, and I recently saw that they're releasing, I've seen these VR headsets that are coming out too. Those are really cool.
Yeah, the mixed reality headsets are very exciting, and people really love them. And you walk into stores, you see people trying them out, and I don't know how many people went out on Black Friday and checked out what was happening. But I went around and looked, and people are just very excited about mixed reality. It's a very exciting new technology, and customers are loving it.
Yeah, the first time I put one of those things on, it was literally otherworldly, and it's cool that we have an operating system that can support that.
Absolutely.
So now that we've got through what's happened since then, there was a bunch of questions from the developer day that went unanswered, and I want to make sure we get them in, if that's okay.
That's awesome.
So the first one is, how do I go about using Fluent and in multiple form factors? Why don't you talk about Fluent design, what it means, and then how it would be used in multiple form
factors? So when we created Fluent and we started really conceiving of the idea, we really wanted to make sure that, first of all, you can build great experiences for each and every device. So when you build for a device, it is excellent, the best experience for that device. But at the same time, you want to make sure that experience feels like it's part of a family of devices. So Fluent kind of balances between the two. You can build great experiences for a device and optimize for that device. At the same time, you can use so many of the same common controls, and they'll adapt to do the right thing with the right type of input. For example, on navigation pane, you can use touch, mouse, keyboard, you can use pen, you can use all different types of input mechanisms, and it just works on all those devices, and it'll adapt. Now, there are times when you want to go customize it, and you can go do that, or there are times you want to share your view, and we try to make it easy to kind of, pick the balance between the two, and it's really up to the customer. But Fluent really tries to balance making sure you can build these excellent experiences and get as much code reuse as possible.
So if I'm using Fluent on a different form factor, it will automatically adapt to that form factor, or is there stuff that I need to do as a developer to make it work?
So we will automatically adapt. Usually it's a screen size, and since we work with most input, each of the devices, the input formats, the input types, those will work. But I always give a caveat. You're always going to want to tailor. I just think you always want to make sure that it's an excellent experience for that device, optimize the best you can. But we try to make it so it adapts most of it, so it's not complete rewrite. It's sharing some of the elements and controls and experiences, but you go tailor it.
As a dev, I think it's important to understand the medium which your software is running in so that then you can tailor it. But you're saying that Fluent gives you all of the options that you need.
Yeah, and it's not even like it's monolithic. Some views, you'll just optimize. A lot of times I'll say is the main view, when you land in the app, I expect that to be different per form factor. Mm-hmm. It tends to be optimized, some sort of a signature experience. But if you're in your settings page and you're just flowing a list of settings, you're probably sharing that view. And so you don't have to write that twice. Or do the tuning as much. So it tends to be you pick and choose where you want to optimize in your application because it really is one platform. All the controls will run on every platform. We also, we talk about continuum, so even if you plug in another screen, it can adapt and work with that screen. So we want to make sure we do some smart stuff there for the developer.
And that's interesting, right? Because I wrote an app, because I tried it, the first time I saw that UWP would work on a Raspberry Pi, I'm like, I'm going to try this out, right? I do machine learning and I made a little robot that follows a line. But there was no UI, and so things are a little bit different, so you need to consider the form factors.
Yep, absolutely.
Fantastic. Next question. Fluent design system looks really great, and I want to start using it, but my application is Win32 WPF. How can I take advantage of it?
So one of the things that I've kind of alluded to in the past is how we're going to make it so that any developer who's built with some of our technologies in the past, that where they have, you know, rich code bases, and they want to take advantage of new capabilities in the Windows 10 platform, can do that incrementally. In the past, it's been like you kind of have to do a lot of changes to get access to these new features. We're going to make that more incremental. But I'm not going to go into too much detail because that's something we're going to talk about at our next Developer Day, which is coming out in March, where we'll talk about what's coming in the spring 2018 update for Windows 10. So that's, I'll give you a little teaser about some of the features we'll add there.
So you heard it here first. Our next Windows Developer Day is going to be March 7th, right? And they wrote it down for me so I would get it right because I just told them that my anniversary is 2 days after, so thanks for the checkpoint there.
Excellent.
Go shopping for gifts right after that. The next question is, one of the pillars of Fluent is depth, but we can't control Z depth. When will it be added?
So that's something we're working right now and trying to figure out the right way to integrate Z depth into the application. Now, it's not the only way that you can add depth perception into your application. We have things like acrylic and parallax that allow you to have this appearance of 3D without having complete 3D with Z depth. So there are things you can do today, and we want to make sure when we add Z depth, it's not, you know, it's not just replicating those features, but it's doing a true Z depth that makes sense on all of our screen form factors, with mixed reality all the way to our 2D screens and, you know, small form factors to large form factors. So we're trying to be very, very careful when we add elements to Fluent that we do that in a way that kind of works across everything, but gives you this kind of very immersive feel, because everybody kind of wants that feeling of depth and immersion that feels like you're in the real world.
So, by the way, this is all about your questions, so make sure you come in. But every once in a while, I get to ask a question. So as a developer, if I want to take advantage of Fluent right now or start working with some of the stuff in Fluent, what would be the best way to move forward with that?
So we have a bunch of design guidelines that we've released and a bunch of new elements in the Fall Creators Update. So we've started by incrementally just keep adding features. When they're ready, we ship them, get feedback from customers and partners, and make sure that, you know, both the end user likes it and our developers like the API. So you can go up, we got a whole site on dev.windows.com where you can go learn all about Fluent and the design language and what elements are available, how you tune it for your own properties, because there are ways where you definitely want to brand it so it feels like, yes, it's Fluent on Windows, but it's kind of, it's more mine. And
yeah,
so it feels like it's my brand, my experience, and it's tailored for experience that your customers expect from your applications.
Awesome. Question from my friend Billy Hollis. How you doing, Billy? It's good to see you. What's the philosophy and process for moving things from the UWP Community Toolkit into the base library?
So as a community goes and works on different elements, when we look at them and realize they're going to be broadly adopted on the platform and we see them just being used in mass, we tend to go, okay, is this the right element? Are we confident that this is now ready for the platform? So it's really about, as it gets more usage and we see it mature in the Community Toolkit, we'll look and say, okay, now it's time to basically build it into the platform, make it available everywhere, and round out. A lot of times, not all the features are rounded out. We will round it out, make sure it works across all the form factors. It's great for things like accessibility. It's great for all the new input types. And so we'll take them and start to bring them into the platform so the developers can depend on them always being in the platform and being a bit more robust just putting our energy and putting our developers behind it.
For those that don't know what the UWP Community Toolkit is, why don't you describe what that is so they can give a little more context to that.
So we have a toolkit where any developer can go and start contributing and work with us on things that aren't in the platform yet or ideas that they have and can incubate them. And they move through different levels of maturity in the open source toolkit that we have. And it really is open for any developers to contribute to. We contribute. But it's where we start to grow and incubate different things and learn. And it's just another way of us learning with developers in the open source versus through insider builds. And we kind of do both. We tend to play with Fluent a bit more in our insider builds because we want customer and end users to see it. And we experiment in our shell in some of our first party experiences. And I think sometimes more of the, I hate to say the word utilitarian, but man, as a developer, I need controls. Yeah. I need some pre-built experiences and content that I can go and just grab that code and it works. And the UWP Toolkit is a great place for that.
So those are just like controls that people have ideas
for? Controls, it's other types of code, it's little libraries that you can go ship that help you do different tasks. And so I tend to talk about controls because we were kind of flowing in from Fluent, but it's actually more than that. It's different libraries of code that you can go use and build in and use in your application. Sometimes we take those and we take the APIs and bake them into the platform. Other times they're just, it's a NuGet package you go get and you use it inside your application.
So it's like a nice sandbox for ideas that everyone uses And then eventually, as we see usage on that go up, we just sort of bake it into what we
Yeah, do. Usage and maturity of how it's going to be used.
I see.
Because once we put it in the platform, we're making a commitment to to never breaking it. And so we want to make sure it's a good API, it's well-rounded, because I'll be honest, we've released some APIs on our platform that we've had to go fix. And we prefer not to go fix them, and then we have two of them or side by side because we didn't quite get it right, or the developer was just too limited and we just couldn't get the model right. So it's a way of us kind of learning and then moving it into the platform where then we make a hard, dependency on app compat. But we don't, we'll make sure the APIs work going forward and you can depend on them.
And that's a good thing you bring up, because I make changes to my code all the time and I don't care, right? But as soon as I bring in a NuGet package, the newest version, I update it and everything breaks, I'm going to be a little peeved, and you're saying that's something we have to worry about.
Right, and once we put it in the platform, we don't do that. Yep. We have a deprecation schedule. If we do end up deprecating something, be honest, it very rarely goes away.
Yeah.
And then the platform just grows in size.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
so when we these are things we're constantly looking at, and so we're very careful about what we bring into the platform. And so we have very multiple different ways where we incubate and learn and mature different API sets.
Awesome. Keep your questions coming. Here's the next question. C. Flowers, what is the ATA on the simplified CS proj format introduced by .NET Core? Is it still coming to UWP projects?
So we're looking at .NET Core and whether we can run that inside of a UWP. It's not something we have a complete announced roadmap for yet, but it's something of high interest to us, especially when you look at things like IoT, where a lot of IoT projects use .NET Core, and they just want to run those same projects inside of a UWP for Windows, versus what we have is .NET Native inside of UWP. So we're looking at how do we make sure that we have, we use .NET Standard, but then there's some pieces in .NET Core that are slightly different than that are additive beyond that. So we're looking at what we do in .NET Core for UWP. We haven't decided completely how to do it or have an announced roadmap.
And that's an interesting thing, because you mentioned UWP, you mentioned .NET Core, and you mentioned .NET Standard. And for some, there may be a little bit of a confusion on what the difference between those three things are. For example, I've heard often .NET Standard, I'm building a .NET Standard project. I mean, is that really what's going on? Why don't you describe what those things are so people can get a sense for what that means?
Okay, I'm going to try and do this one, but yes, they all have the same acronyms, and let's see if I can make sure I don't mix them all up. So .NET Standard is a defined API set that you can depend on every single version of .NET having. We're at .NET Standard 2.0, and pretty much all versions of .NET. .NET Native is one that runs in UWP. Xamarin is what we use on iOS and Android. And we have .NET Core, which is an open source one that people can go and embed inside their applications. And there's .NET Framework, which is what runs as part of traditional desktop applications on Windows.
Sure.
All of them will support .NET Standard. You can take a binary, build it to .NET Standard 2.0, and it will run in any of those. So it's a well-defined portable class library in essence. We've defined that, and so you can depend on it. So now the question is, we have this .NET Core, which is an open source version of .NET, and it runs on multiple different platforms. And some customers have asked to run it inside of UWP because it's slightly different than .NET Native. .NET Native, the goal we have with .NET Native, and the reason why we call it .NET Native, is it actually compiles all of .NET and all your C# code to native codes. When it deploys to your customers, there's no IL, there's no jitting, there's no, all the different
It's fast.
Technologies. Yeah. It loads incredibly fast. .NET Core still does some jitting, and it has a reflection.emit, so there's a few extra features that we don't get because we natively compile it.
Right.
So we're looking at how do we bring some of those features in. Is it, do we run .NET Core inside of UWP and allow people to just depend on that library? Do we add some of those features and expand .NET Standard? Right now, I think we're just focusing on, should we be running .NET Core, and what's the right way to do that for our Windows customer, Windows developers.
So let's see if I understand. .NET Standard 2.0, or .NET Standard, with the latest version is .NET Standard 2.0.
Yep.
It's just like a document that says, here are all the things
contract.
That if you're .NET Standard 2.0 compliant that you will run.
Yep, it's binary compatible. So if you build a binary, that binary will work on all of the implementations at a .NET Standard. So it's a binary, not a recompile.
I see.
And that's actually a huge benefit to developers. They build a shared library, .NET Standard 2.0, they just link it in, it'll run across all versions of .NET that support it.
And then, so this is the standard, and then there are multiple implementations of that standard. One of them is .NET Core, another one is UWP, and some of their implementation details might be different, but they'll still adhere to the contract.
Yeah, for .NET 2, we made them the same. But they also, again, they optimize for their purposes.
I see.
And again, this is the there's not always one key that fits all the locks.
Sure.
You know, and we really want to make sure that we were optimizing them for each of those endpoints while keeping something consistent. But there are some features in .NET Core, so if you do build an application for IoT, that's one where we've received some strong feedback. They'd like to just use .NET Core and have those features and share it among all their IoT devices, whether they're Windows, Linux, or anything else.
Oh, I see. That makes sense.
So when they write if you build an IoT to .NET Core for Linux, you really want to use the exact same. Well, if you wrote to .NET Core, it might use some features in .NET Core that aren't in .NET Standard 2.0, and yet they want to just link in the library and run it inside of, on a Windows IoT device as well.
That
and
makes
so
sense.
We're looking at that option. We haven't really thought about running two .NETs. It just wasn't kind of in our minds.
Yeah.
But it makes sense that if you're going to have an open source one, should we let that run in UWP so you can go use that workflow? If that's what developers want, we're looking at how we would do that.
Awesome. Well,
no commitment, but we're looking at it.
Keep your questions coming. Like I said, he's really honest about all the answers. It's fantastic. All right, here's another question from the last developer days. PCLs and UWP, is this a decent option for UWP and Xamarin to share code? Pickles, as Miguel calls them.
This is right in line with what I was saying, which is a portable class library. When you build to .NET Standard 2.0, you build a portable class library, and that will work in UWP, and that will work in Xamarin. It'll actually work with .NET Core. It'll work with .NET Framework. So that's the best way to share business logic code. For UI, we talked about a thing called XAML Standard. And XAML Standard is really about sharing, in essence, some of the syntax so that as you build UI, we just had XAMLs that just kind of look different. I mean, we had multiple different flavors. And so we're trying to fix those seams that are across our XAMLs so they feel the same. But the purpose is, like for Xamarin Forms, the goal is that you can really build shared UI for mobile devices, mainly iOS and Android. Whereas XAML for UWP is meant to build a great desktop app, and XAML, even for WPF, was again about building a best-of-breed Windows application. So the purposes of those XAMLs are kind of different, but you can share concepts across them all, and if you do a good MVVM, you can actually share you know, different views if it makes sense. But again, I go back to the tailoring being really important. Don't just share views to share views. We really want you, our recommendation is you build tailored experiences for your devices with some, you know, making sure that where it makes sense you can share. And a lot of times your business logic you can.
And so, that's an interesting thing that you bring up, because if you're doing MVVM right, the view models will be portable.
Yep.
It's how you bind them to XAML that's going to be a little bit different, right?
And I'll go a little bit deeper on that. What we've noticed also is that what you build for mobile is not always the same experience or even feature set that you build on a desktop application.
Right.
A lot of desktop applications do different functions. And if you have a business, each of your devices may have different purposes. Now, sometimes they share some features, but we also don't, like UWP, one of the things we've kind of, I think, confused a little bit is they think, oh, UWP is about taking a mobile app and running it on a desktop. And they're like, no, it's about having one platform, but you're going to build a desktop app, a desktop UWP, share code where it makes sense, but build a rich desktop experience, not a mobile app running on desktop, because we have features that make it great for the desktop. And so we do think that you will build different apps for these different form factors, and that's just, it's kind of bared out. If you look at some of our ISVs, some of the big applications, what they do on a desktop is significantly deeper than what you can do on a mobile device, or even what you can do on some of the larger screens.
But there's going to be still a large aspect of shared code that you could have.
Well, you share the features, I think you share the code. Sometimes I think we think about sharing the full experience, where it's really about, where you have the same feature, run it the same. I mean, I want the same code. But I'm going to have more memory, more footprint, a larger disk, and I'm going to do a richer, heavier experience. I might have multi-mon set up.
Sure.
And those, you're not going to bring multi-mon to a phone.
Right? Yeah.
You're not. You're going to, but it'll be on a desktop, multiple windows, these types of features. We're making sure to close some of the feature gaps that we've had in the past so you can build best-of-breed desktop applications.
Awesome. Next question from Tomas Demi, hope I said that right. Any news on UWP Shell Extension APIs? I'm thinking System Tray, Taskbar, Action Center widgets.
So one of the things that we're trying to do when we build these shell extensions is we're trying to reinvent the model. The current model is all in proc.
So let me stop you there. What is a shell extension for those that might not know?
The shell extension is basically when you launch Explore.exe, you know, the developer, they all know Explore.exe is what draws all the windows, and it also is what File Explorer that comes up.
Okay.
So a lot of times people want to extend File Explorer so you can right-click, have different file extensions.
Oh, that would
or
be cool, yeah.
You can add, you know, just, you know, there's all kinds of different hooks that we've had over the years built into the File Explorer. And even SysTrace, so you can do jump lists and all these different pieces of the shell. When we did it early on, they were all running in process, which means that Explore.exe has to get taken down. If you uninstall or install these things, it could be loaded in memory. So we're really reinventing each of them one by one as an out-of-proc model. So all extensions to the shell will be done out of process, so they can be restarted and they can be rehooked, and it doesn't destabilize the Explorer. And we've all seen it. Sometimes you have a bad one, it crashes the whole thing, and then it comes up. So adding this robustness, and as we're, in essence, reinventing how we do the shell extensions, taking a little bit of time, but we will be doing and giving access to many or almost all of those features over time.
It's a way of making your application feel more part of the OS, I guess.
Yeah, and people want to extend it all over the place. It's kind of expected. You know, I know I use Dropbox, and it adds a little Dropbox icon there. It allows me to know if it's a Dropbox folder. It does some things. So we're doing like those type of things in what we think better ways. And you can continue to use the old ways. That's something we'll also probably talk a little bit back in March, is how we're, again, exposing more of these features in an incremental way. Some of the things you've been able to do in the past will allow you to do, while at the same time, we're inventing better ways for the future that we think are going to make the system more robust. One of our real ambitions is to make it so that upgrades are more robust from applications, from the OS itself. And a lot of that means we can't have all this in-proc loading. We can't have apps just spewing things all over the disk. We really have to have just a better process modernizing really the install and management of applications and files on the system better.
Well, there's something to be said about installation through the store, right? Because the store installation is actually really nice. It manages almost everything for me. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so one of the nice things about the new install model, the AppX model, is it really leaves nothing in the registry. So we've completely virtualized the registry. We virtualize parts of the OS, the file system, and we make sure that it, in essence, when it's gone, right? And it has very little impact. Now, I might be able to write a file into a shared folder. That's what I want. If I save some file, I can save it to shared folders. But I don't want an imprint from the application, and I want to be able to uninstall it and have it go away clean. Or, as I've told customers, how many times have you had customers, you know, they have something that didn't work with their app, they uninstalled, they tried to reinstall, and the reinstall didn't work.
Yeah.
And now we'll make that reinstall incredibly robust. So I told developers, this is a great solution for you, whether you're putting it in the store or not. So there's no requirement to put it in the store to adopt our new install technology. So all the install technology works, whether you load it from a website, whether you put it in our store, whether you deploy it using SCCM or Intune. It really is just a new end-to-end install technology that allows you to have just a cleaner install footprint and an update model. If you want us to update it, then you put it in the store and we will keep it updated through our CDNs and all that stuff. Or you can do it yourself. But it really, I keep emphasizing, is just a new way of making our system more robust and more stable.
As a dev, how do I get access to this new install technology?
We have a thing called a desktop app converter, which will allow you to take an MSI, load it, and it will create an AppX out of it. If you use things like Install Shield or Wix or something like that, if you get their latest versions, they all support outputting it as well. So the nice thing you can do is in your project, and I think Andrew showed a bunch of some of the new features in Visual Studio as well, where you can just easily just add it into your project, and now you have a new output type. So when it used to output an MSI, it now outputs an AppX and an MSI. So on Windows 7, you continue to use the MSI, and on Windows 10, I recommend you always use the AppX.
So if I'm installing an AppX, let's just say I'm not using the store for whatever reason, even though I think it's a good idea. If I download an AppX and I click on it, it will install
it? It installs today. Yep. Download it from the web, click on it, it installs. There's a default handle that puts up and has a little UI and lets you notification when it's done.
And then when I uninstall, it's just a... And if I'm doing
an update... It's gone super fast.
If I'm doing my own updates, how do I do that? Just download a new AppX and it'll restore it?
And just install that, it'll update it.
That's pretty cool. I'm just saying. I need to look into this. I have not done that, to be honest. Let's go to Rafael Rivera. Any chance we'll see APIs for repositioning moving Windows? In UWP and Redstone 4, our app opens UI that is positioned non-deterministically and it's driving us nuts. I'm so glad I got to say non-deterministically. It makes me sound smart even though I just said it wrong.
So we will have more to talk about as far as the roadmap for those features. It's something that is probably the highest on my list and we are trying to get done. We'll talk about that in March.
Nice. Well, looks like we have a lot to talk about in March. From James C., a tag on Raphael's question. If so, will we see window positioning APIs for mixed reality as in 3D window positioning?
The shell model, so I'll call it the shell model that we're working on for Windows Mixed Reality, is something that's very nascent. It's very new. We're still working on it. Right now, you have really very, you know, most things are full screen, and we have a little bit of positioning where the user positions it in the actual shell. So it's something we're thinking about. I don't think we're there yet. The 2D one, let me tell you, I know is a gap. We're going to go solve it. It's important. But the 3D one, I think we're trying to figure out the right model, right? Because if we start having apps move things around in your virtual world without you having some control over it, you know, that's like, you know, my kids moving my stuff in my house and I yell like, where to go, you know?
I can't find anything. I haven't.
So I'm thinking of my virtual world if, you know, apps start moving it around. So, but there is an idea that we do want apps to be able to collaborate and talk to each other and position each other. So we're working on it. If you have ideas, like here's one of the things like I'll just continue to say. If you have ideas, rather than just asking us questions, send us ideas. Because like we really want to ideate with you. We want to go iterate. And hey, if you got something good and you think there's a good solution, oh my gosh, we'll jump down that. But sometimes we're just not sure exactly the right way to do it. And we're looking for ideas.
That's awesome. I mean, and do they just go to dev.windows.com or Windows?
Yeah, okay. I mean, there's multiple places and you know to give feedback and or you know communicate through all. We have you know many different programs that you can go and you can connect with as well as giving us ideas. So
awesome. All right. So keep your questions coming. Next question from Al17. Is there any report viewer or report designer control in the works for UWP?
That is not one I've heard of. It's on my list right now. We can add it, but it's not one that I've seen near the top of the requests. So just honestly, I don't think it's probably you'll see it in the next release or so. But if there's good reasons and they have good, you know, this again, one of the things about giving us feedback is why, what's the scenario, and let us understand it. Maybe it's an option for the community toolkit,
right.
So something to go incubate there or to work in some other open source. You know, we have items like the Telera controls that we have now in the community toolkit where they're very high quality controls that we use in our enterprise and for these things. So maybe it's a place for us to create it there and then over time look at it for the platform.
Awesome. James C., one thing that comes up a lot from my devs on the XAML front is will there ever be better exception information for issues in XAML? The errors they barf out, his words, not mine, are in no way helpful whatsoever. I need them to tell me where the error is. That's a good question.
Yeah, I'd say we make incremental progress each release, trying to do better on the error reporting and the robustness. So it's something where I think we'll get better. Will it solve your specific issues? I don't know. It'd be great to find out, you know, maybe get some samples there. But we are improving it. I just know no matter how much I say it'll be great, there'll still be places where it doesn't do great. I mean, it's just going to take us time to keep maturing it, finding the issues, and getting better and better error messages. That, to me, is just an iterative thing we have to keep getting better at.
But for James, yeah, keep pointing at us. If there's something you don't like, tell us.
Yeah, you find a place where it didn't report a useful error, let us know.
That's right. From Atish Philip, any chance we can create non-rectangular windows using Composition API? What's the Composition API?
So the way our system is layered is there's this, you know, there's obviously DirectX, which is how you draw pixels and rasterize images. Then we have a compositing layer, which is really about spatial partitioning, where you can create regions and then overlap them. And that's really how our window manager works. So our window manager is built on this composition layer. And then inside your app, you also can have regions. And then you can animate them very quickly and we'll cache the content. So the composition layer is about being able to do fluid animations and effects. And it's really the layer that all of our XAML UI library is built on top of. But the Composition API gives you that base foundation. And some people who build very rich immersive canvases, and if I think about the Word canvas, so you're in Word, you know, not the UI, but the actual editing of Word, they write to things like the Composition API to get fluidity among their animations, and they use things like DirectX in order to draw. And so that's really the customer, I think, for Composition APIs. And non-rectangular regions.
That's like old school Winamp stuff. Remember back
day
when you, and then it had like this other UI.
And GDI had a clip region API, so you had a GDI, we could set an arbitrary clip region around it. In many ways, people use transparency in order to get away with that. So we've kind of moved away from doing clip regions, because it actually isn't any. So you say a non-rectangular region. The better way of doing that is to make it transparent, and then you composite it, because we're not going to make it any smaller. So in some ways, I don't think we'll ever make them non-rectangular. You should just make them transparent. If you want to clip, that's a different effect. We want the non-rectangular to clip, then maybe. But we haven't actually looked at any kind of clipping. So I need to know exactly what they're trying to do with the non-rectangular. If you just want it to look non-rectangular for the composition APIs, then you can make it look non-rectangular inside of your application. If they're talking about the top-level window, we're not really looking at doing a lot in the non-rectangular top-level windows, especially based on some of the stuff we announced yesterday, where non-rectangular, when we talk about sets and tab sets, where non-rectangular windows become very, very confusing to a user who would want to actually combine them. So we're actually, I'll be honest, top-level windows, non-rectangular, there are a few use cases, but in many ways we're thinking that probably is not how most end users want to use them.
So you're saying there's a way to do that with transparency. You can draw something and then
inside your app.
Yeah, inside your app.
Not for a top-level window.
Got it.
And we're really kind of resistant to doing it in the top-level window because we just think the end user gets confused when some windows are non-rectangular, some aren't. There are some use cases like clip regions. I used to do like a little clippy, the snipping tool, whatever you want to call it. I forget the name of it. Then there's interesting reasons to be able to go do that. But other than those experiences, we really want most apps to be rectangular so you can create great sets. The user has common expectation. If you remember the Winamp days, those apps were kind of weird and hard to use. They didn't really fit well, and ultimately customers didn't.
They don't do them that way anymore.
They don't do them anywhere because it didn't feel right. It felt so different.
All right, so keep your questions coming. As my questions refresh here, I have a couple of questions, and I feel like I've neglected to ask this pretty much every time. What are one or two or three features in UWP that you just think are stellar that people should check out right away?
So the one that I always like is clearly a UI guy is I think Fluent is magical. And I think we really have something there with how we reach the customer, how the customers like the UI. It's denser UI. It's more appropriate for each device. So I always start with Fluent as an experience point of view, because I ultimately think your customers have to love your applications and go and use them. Even if you're a line of business, you want your customers now, consumerization of IT, everybody wants to love the app and have a great experience. I think the next thing I would emphasize is ink. I do think it's very natural. I think the day of the pen has come. We've made it very easy to use all of Windows with the pen. My handwriting and the way we're looking at using intelligence with the pen, I think it's going to be something that changes the way we interact with our devices. I know I'm one of the guys who gets up to the whiteboard all the time, and I just start drawing something, and that's how I conceptualize. And so I just think the pen is something where, hey, really start looking at how you can light that up in your applications and make a unique experience for your customers. And if I was going to go now mundane, I actually think the installer technology is absolutely critical. Like, we all talk about machine rot. We all want our machines to never get worse, and we want to make sure they're robust during install, uninstall, updates. Because over time, you say, okay, the machine just doesn't run as well. I want my machine to run well from day one to day 1,000. And so I do think it starts with having a great install technology.
So you're talking about Fluent was the first one. Second one was Pen. And then the ink, and then the last one was the installer.
Yeah, and those are the ones that kind of stand out to me, and I'm sure I come up with 20 others since I there's so many great features.
I don't know. Look, like the first time I actually, because I'm old school programmer guy, and I was reticent of the pen, and it turns out that I bought my wife a Surface because she does a lot of artistic stuff, and the first time I actually tried the pen, I was really surprised. Like, it did not, like, anytime I think of myself drawing on a computer, I'm like thinking, and hopefully that sounded as bad as I try to make it sound, but it did not feel like that. It felt natural, and I could put my hand on it. It wouldn't, like, you know how before the pen would go here, and then it would do this part right here, and it'd be annoying? It really doesn't do that.
No, and I actually went out shopping with my daughter for a laptop, and she saw the Surface Studio.
Yeah, which is
and
really cool.
Put the dial and the pen together, and she was like, wow, that's magical. And I'm like, no, you can't get that. That's not for you. Yeah, you're getting a laptop.
All right, from Ratisha, what are the new upcoming features in Windows Composition APIs?
It's really about, some of the stuff we've added is really about the effects and really the features that support Fluent. So when we think about implementing Fluent, a lot of the ideas start in the composition layer. So you'll see things like making sure that acrylic is both beautiful and battery efficient. So my team spends a lot of time making sure that we can draw these type of things both efficiently and beautifully and fluidly with high frame rate and balancing across all of them. So in many ways, you'll see a lot of these new features that we see in Fluent were baked into the composition layer, and then they were made alive when they come alive in the controls and the interaction model. And so there's just a bunch of new lighting things in those features. But new ones coming, we'll talk about some of those in the March time
frame. Nice. We can't spill all the beans right away, right? I mean, that's the thing. Okay, from Joseph, will MS Edge be further developed for ARM-based devices like IoT devices and Windows Mobile as the current Edge HTML on Fall Creators Update is still Edge HTML 15 on that devices, those devices? I'm not sure I understand the question. Maybe you can help me understand it.
I'm working on that,
man. Yeah.
I think they're just saying is, will Edge HTML be updated? When we update the Edge HTML is built into the operating system. It's deeply integrated in, and we highly tune it with the OS, and we really build the OS, you know, as a foundational piece for our web platform. And our web platform is really a huge anchor for the number of amount of content that runs on Windows that is web content. So we really optimize it deeply into the OS. And so when we update the OS, we update the version of Edge HTML. So that will continue to happen is, whether it's regardless of the type of device it is, when we update the OS version, we'll update the Edge version. So I'm not sure what they're running into. It's something I can look at, but that's our pattern is we keep them updated within the version of Windows.
So it's part of the OS, which means that it will also work in IoT devices.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
So when we get that new version of Windows, it will have the new Edge HTML on it.
Awesome. Next one from Maya. Did you guys already come up with a more creative code name for the next version instead of using Redstone? I think they were going to go with Seth Juarez, but I don't know. Is that what we decided?
We're not announcing a name for the next version. Nice. Yeah, there'll be a spring 2018 update. The Redstone's either are internal code names that we use. And, you know, we don't actually use them externally, but we internally use them so people, when they speak to people, they'll refer to them. But in many ways, you're seeing what we had the Fall Creators update,
right,
and then we'll have a spring update in 2018. Our goal is to have two updates a year. One in the spring, one in the fall. And sure, we'll give them names. And we've tried for developers really just use version numbers that are attached to the timeline,
sure,
since it's simpler rather than having to always, you know, come up with some name that the developer has to worry about. Instead, we just, it'll be two releases a year, and we'll use these numbers like 1703 and 1709 and those type of things.
Nice. I just got an update myself, so I'm pretty excited about that. From Jan, how do you see the adjustment of a 2D and a 3D applications in a mixed reality world? How should I think about this? It's a great question.
So it is a great question. That's actually one of the most exciting areas I personally find is, how do I help developers who primarily think in 2D to start to really move into the 3D world and create applications that have depth? Because I still think most human beings interact in a 2D way, but they visualize and they see and consume content in a 3D way. You know, if you think about any of the games, they all have planar view. We're all very rectilinear aligned. So we're trying to make it, and we're looking at various different technologies. I mean, there's things like extrusion. There's things like billboarding. There's things like all sorts of techniques to go from 2D to 3D. There's parallax. There's a bunch of different techniques we're looking at. And it's something that is very, very important to us, and we're prioritizing and putting a lot of not only engineers on, but designers, because we feel like the designers got to lead the charge here about how do you visualize it and how do you interact.
Right.
And so as part of Fluent, that's why we made 3D an anchor and depth an anchor of Fluent, is we want to find a way to break through to build great designs that bridge the 2D and 3D world and then help developers not have to all become experts in 3D spatial app building.
Right.
Instead, they get very, very simple apps they can go use and build. And we're trying to figure that out. And then, you know, I'm not saying we're there yet, but it's something, again, we're looking for feedback and ideas and collaboration. I mean, Fluent is something we really want to do as a collaboration with the design community. Help us figure out the right way for humans to interact and experience 3D immersive experiences, but yet have the simplicity of how we build 2D applications today, not the complexity of how it is to build a 3D application.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like this is... Remember when we used to do things all in DOS and we had to draw everything like in the DOS?
Yeah, now we're dating ourselves.
We moved to GUI, and that was quite a revolution. There had to be some serious thought put into how that would be done. I feel like this is the next step in that evolution. Right?
It is. It really is the next step, and I think humans like to interact, but they like constraints. Like, we don't want a completely open, unconstrained world. Just like on the desktop, you can't just shove Windows and turn them in every dimension. There's nice layout options, there's some controlling that helps you position and lay out your world your way, but there's nice constraints that help you do it well.
Right.
I think we need to do the same thing in between 2D and 3D.
All right, good question. From Bob, Timeline is just entering the insider builds. What do I need to do to be in this?
So basically, we have a bunch of APIs called the Roam APIs that allow you to go write activities into the Microsoft Graph. And so basically go learn about Roam, understand those APIs. You create an activity. I think we demoed this. Demoed it. You know,
yeah.
Exactly. It's pretty simple. Where you go, there's a REST API ultimately at the end of the day that goes and stores it in the Microsoft Graph. We've made it easy to go store it. You can go create a card. And then that's how you basically write an activity, and it will show up in Timeline. And then you can have it resume into your application. Then you have to handle that in the application. So when you go and resume, you need to be able to resume to that point in your application. So it's kind of a two-part process. One, your app needs to write it into the Roam API. And two, your app needs to be able to handle rehydrating to that point. And I think when you start to see your customers start to click there and go, oh, yeah, that's what I wanted to do, and they were to continue right where they left off from Timeline, I think you're going to see some great magic, and your app usage will go up, which is ultimately what everybody wants.
And I don't think people realize that you can actually call the Roam APIs from your Xamarin apps as well.
Yep.
So you might have an experience on the desktop in UWP. They've done X or Y, and they're at 0.5 of a 15 thing, and they don't want to have to go to, and now they're on their phone because they got to leave, and you can pick up right where you left off.
You should be writing from all your devices and making sure it's always up to date, and you can even do it from your browser. So if you're in your browser and you have a browser experience and an app experience, you can store it there too. They're just REST APIs. So you can link your browser and your apps together depending on what your business choices are and what you want for your customer. But we just think filling that out and really making sure the Timeline has the right set of data and the right set of activities for your customers is going to be, you know, night and day for really re-engagement of your application across any of the devices that they own. Whether it's Windows or even iOS and Android.
And the thing I saw the first inkling of that at Build. They showed us a little bit, and I was really impressed. It's like now we're really moving away from, okay, there's this staid box that I do my work in, and that's it. But now you can actually think of an application as an experience that goes across device boundaries.
And I think the magic of Timeline is now there is a front and center user experience in the shell that allows re-engagement. And we think this is kind of the anchor of a lot of the features. Sure, when I was placing them inside of the cloud, when I was putting them up into the Microsoft Graph, how did the end user ultimately know how to get that? It was in these other apps. Now, there is a very prominent shell affordance where you can see the Timeline. It's a place where we think end users will go as a re-engagement. We can actually start to surface those tasks in other parts of the shell as well. And so we think this is kind of like the moment.
Yeah.
Developers, like, now if you don't go there, someone else does, their app's going to get re-engaged and not yours. So it's like a missed opportunity to get, you know, really your business, you know, launched early and get that re-engagement and get that customer affinity.
And that's actually really cool because I have the attention span of a squirrel, as my producer would say. And so having that stuff, oh, that's what I was doing, that's where I was, let me get back to that, is pretty powerful.
Yep.
All right, from David, I really like the UWP platform, but I still have a hard time convincing people they should build client apps instead of websites. Seems like people just want websites, no desktop applications anymore, ?
I think it's a balance. I mean, I think we see both. We see there are times when it is just good enough to build a website. If you just really have a front end to a web service, maybe a website is adequate. Where if you want to build a rich client experience that leverages the platform, that differentiates on the experience, then you want to build a client application. We even give you a mixture where you can do something like a PWA, a progressive web app, where you can take your website and leave it pretty much the same and then light up platform features inside of it by just, in essence, still just emitting API calls from the server. So we kind of like give you the spectrum, and it's, I tend not to try to be prescriptive to customers. It's really your business choice about which one's best for you. And we provide you tools to go build them.
That's awesome. So it's not like a do what you like and be happy. We'll give you the playground.
Yep.
Awesome. From Steven, when can we expect courses on Fluent Design, such as MBA?
That I don't know. I don't know what that is. We'll have to get back on when there'll be courses.
But there is some documentation on Fluent Design.
There's a bunch of documentation, a bunch of places you can learn, but actual courses, I don't have the answer for that.
From Atish, how easy, difficult would it be for developers to use the upcoming sets features of Windows 10 in their own UWP apps?
So, I'm not sure they're exactly asking if they want to do like an MDI type thing, but we are going to, so there'll be a set of APIs that we will expose to developers for them to work with sets, manage sets, and be able to integrate with those things. And that's something we'll talk about, you know, in the future. Mm-hmm. So we'll be showing the SDK, talking about APIs. And we're really just working out what those APIs should be. So I'd say it's kind of early still. We have ideas of them. We're using some of our own first-party applications and some close partners to kind of vet out what we think the right set of APIs will be for developers. And then we'll start getting, once we're ready with that, we'll go out and insider builds, we'll talk about it, and we'll try and get some feedback to figure out, is it the right set of APIs? Because, you know, there's a lot we could add in as far as window management, but we want to make sure it's respectful of the user choice and how they want to use it too. So we haven't settled on an exact API set or programming model for them.
Fantastic.
But there will be some.
But look forward to that.
And if you have ideas when you start playing with it, please tell them, like, hey, this is what I would like to do in my app. You know, I'm going to keep asking for the feedback because we are really only as good as our feedback.
Sure.
Right? I mean, we used to have this model in Windows and Microsoft where we would think inside and then we'd ship it outside. Now it's about, no, we want the world to think with us and to join with us. And so we only have the information we have. We want the information the customers have, their experience, to influence the product.
And I feel like that's not just lip service, because we actually have insiders built. And I was told, and this is crazy, that because we were getting better feedback from people outside of Microsoft, the insiders ring gets it before some people even at Microsoft, which
yes.
is kind of cool.
Yes. We are trying to democratize the feedback cycle so it's not just inside Microsoft, you have a friend, you know them, you ask them to go do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't scale. We do want to scale to the breadth of Windows. Our goal is billions of customers. So you got to reach the billions of customers to understand them.
And if you're not on the Windows Insider Program, it's really easy to sign up. Yep. Just have an MSA account and you can sign up and start getting builds. I got one just last night, which is pretty cool. All right, from Sharon, with the rollout of Fall Creators Update, what things do I need to do to start supporting Fluent in my app, yet be able to still support users on Creators Update?
So basically, in some ways, it depends on how your application is architected. If you really want to use some of the new controls, you might try to do light up, but I probably think you might just do two different views, one for one, one for the other.
What does light up mean?
Light up to me is when you're going to go detect dynamically that I'm on the new one, and then I'll inject a control. So if you wanted to put an extra button, right, then I can see saying, okay, if I'm on the new version, I put a button that gives me a camera that does something special. Right? And that's pretty easy to add. But if you're going to like use some of the signature controls from the Fall Creators Update, then it probably changes that UI enough. You'll probably just build two different views. So if you do a good MVVM, a lot of your code doesn't have to change. You're just changing your view somewhat. If there's one control you're updating, then you might be able to do that dynamically as well. So it kind of depends on the architecture of the application.
So it depends on what you're doing and how you light stuff up.
So it's hard to give a general answer.
Awesome. All right. Well, keep your questions coming. I love talking about these things in Windows. Now, let's talk about some tips and tricks for someone that's actually considering starting a UWP application. Tell me about, like, what is it that I would do as a developer to actually light up some of the greatest things in UWP?
So the first thing we actually have is that we have a new template studio that we have, which allows you to easily go pick a bunch of the common features. It's a checkbox. You kind of, hey, I want these features added. And so it kind of gets you going, and you can actually go back and revisit it and add more. So we tried to make it pretty easy to get some of the basic features with this template studio. You have to download it. We're looking at trying to get it built right into Visual Studio, but now it's downloaded and updated via NuGet. So it's still pretty easy to go get. But it's allowing you to easily get started, pick a few features, see some sample code in your application that's live, product-ready code to get going. So that's what I recommend is the easiest way to get going. And then looking at samples. I mean, that's how I learn everything, is I go look at a sample. Even some of the APIs I built, I'm like, so who wrote better code than me, you know, and did they get it right? And, you know, we all learn from looking at the code that's out there. But Template Studio does a pretty good job of getting you going from the start.
Awesome. From my good friend Rodrigo from Mexico, talking about user choice, could you please talk more about WPF Roadmap, Business Applications Architect and Developer here? He's a great programmer.
Yeah, so one of the things this is sort of alluded to early on, is we're looking at how we can allow our WPF and WinForm customers, and even those who just built custom Win32 application UI with user and GDI, to be able to incrementally adopt some of our new UI features. And that's something we're going to talk about in depth at the next Developer Day in March. So I'd say stay tuned. We will talk more about what we think the roadmap there is for our WPF and WinForm customers so they can, in essence, be modernizing their application, taking advantage of more and more of the features on the Windows 10 platform, which up to right now, you can use some of them, but it has been at times challenging to get access to some of the new features. And that's kind of been, I think, hard for customers because they can't cut over completely to UWP. And we know it needs to be much more of an incremental journey as they begin to adopt some of the Win 10 platform features that are inside of a UWP. So we want to find a way to make that easier for our existing customers and from their existing code bases.
That's awesome. So one of the things
but I was real nebulous there. So
one of the things you mentioned was that you like to look at stuff in order to help you like look at code, etc. Is there any applications out there that are using Fluent really well just to inspire me as a dev on how I could actually build things?
So the ones I know of the most are a lot of the first party applications that we work with. So it's interesting enough, we actually have a roadmap for every single first party application at Microsoft and their journey on the Fluent journey. So it's a big spreadsheet. We look at each feature, and not every app's adopting all the same features at the same time. They're adopting the ones that make sense. We're literally trying to live it like customers, which is, hey, we're not forcing it on anyone. We're inspiring them inside. And they're not every feature is applicable to every application type. Our mapping app is going to adopt features at a different rate than Office, Word or even Excel or when you think about even your mail application and calendar. So many of those applications are all showing various different features. And I think in many of the sessions, we sort of showcase each of the elements and how an application has lit that element up, allowing developers to see, hey, here's how you might use that element in a way that makes your app more engaging, more exciting, more dynamic. And so I'd say the easiest place to look at is really a lot of the first party experiences and seeing how they've done it. Not holistically, not everybody's just cut over and rewrote their whole app, but in places they're beginning to light them up. And what we really feel is over the next 4 or 5 years, you'll see they started at a very different point than where they're ended, but they never lost their customer along the way. They never had a jarring transition. Instead, they had a bunch of delightful moments to the point where I just like it better, and I didn't lose that customer. And that's kind of the world we live in today. You do a bunch of A/B testing, you do a bunch of experiments, and if your customers start to get upset, you undo it, And everybody wants to live in that incremental world, very, very, customer-centric, and we want to make sure you can go do that.
Awesome. So to wrap up, anything you want to say to wrap up this Windows Community Stand-Up?
I guess, two things. One, the Fall Creators app update is out there. I think Roam is a great thing for re-engagement. We should go, that's one of my other favorite features.
Yeah.
Timeline is coming in there. Get ready for that. And look forward to talking more about what's coming in the Spring 2018 update at Developer Day in March, so stay tuned for that. There'll be a lot of very cool technology you see that, and a lot of it's already in the Insider Build, but we'll talk at length about how it surfaces and makes sense for developers, how they can piece together to great experiences.
Awesome, well thank you so much for your time. For those who are wondering, if you go to design.microsoft.com, you will look at more of the design, Fluent design stuff. Dev.microsoft.com for all the other Devy type stuff. As a reminder, our next Windows Developer Day will be in March 7th of next year, so make sure to stay tuned for that. Thanks so much. Corporate Vice President of Windows Developer Platform. This has been the Windows Community Stand-Up. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Thanks.